Like, I do feel for me in life, as a friend, as a family member, as a farmer, I'm not the person who just shows up unannounced when you're moving to help load the couch. So some of those lessons of pacing, of how meaningful those people are, I want to do that more.
That was Stuart Chutter, and this is episode 186 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life. Stuart Chutter is the first trail ultra runner we've had on the show who is also a regenerative farmer from Melville, Saskatchewan. We were super curious about how a person finds the time for both farming and ultra running, activities that each require significant commitment, time, and energy for success. So we invited Stuart to come on the show to talk about both of his passions. In this episode, Stuart tells us about how he started running and ended up in Melville as a farmer. We discuss the five principles of soil health and the bag of seeds that he mentally carries on a run, as well as the dual application of each to both farming and ultra running. As we talk about his running philosophy, we move into a conversation around Stuart's recent experience pacing his friend and recent guest, Evan Birch, during the 300-mile speed project from Santa Monica, California to Las Vegas, Nevada, which could be a whole podcast in and of itself. We cover a lot of ground in this episode. Did you catch that dual pun there? And we hope you enjoy this refreshing chat with Stuart Chutter. Well, Stuart, welcome to the Inspired Souls podcast. We're really happy to have you with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. I've listened to the podcast a whole bunch of episodes, so I'm a fan for sure.
Well, we're always on the lookout for interesting people with interesting stories, and yours definitely intrigued me when I started to see you appear in, you know, different social media posts and with different running friends of mine. And so I'm really excited to dive a little bit into your story. So why don't you just start out with telling us a little bit about yourself? Where are you coming to us from?
Sure. Yeah, I'm phoning from Saskatchewan. I'm a farmer out in East Central Saskatchewan. I raise forage crops for grazing livestock, and also some of it ends up as seed for other producers for growing forages, which would be like grasses and legumes for pastures and hay and feed production. I started running in 2019, just down my gravel country roads, and I think about a year later, entered a first half marathon in Regina and followed that kind of path of how far can I go? And so now I'm in the ultra world trying to see exactly how far I can go. I'm not a very fast runner. Speed doesn't intrigue me, but distance does.
Okay. So you started running 2019. And then we had a little thing called the global pandemic that happened shortly after that, but you still managed to run a half marathon within that year, which is pretty cool. And from what I can tell, rapidly, we won't say accelerated, we'll see stretched into some very long distance races. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened after that half marathon?
Yeah, I went to that first race terrified. I just started running. Everyone on the start line looks so fit and they have all the right gear and everyone looks like runners, and you're showing up for your first race, questioning if you are a runner or if you know what you're doing. But I remember it was in Regina. It was the Queen City Marathon. I was doing the half, and there were this couple there in fluorescent tights, aerobic, I don't know what you'd call it, 90s aerobic costumes. Oh, and they had name tags. They were Mr. and Mrs. Tequila.
Oh my gosh.
And they were having the most fun. Yeah. And that was the first time I realized, you know, race wasn't just speed. Running isn't just painful. Running is community and fun and doing your own thing.
So how did it go for you?
I mean, I kept going. So I did a few more halves and started chasing some speed goals of personal bests. And and was achieving that down that path. Then I did a few marathons. It would have been, my first marathon would have been a virtual one. Actually, my first marathon was Calgary Virtual Marathon. I figured out a neighbor's farm that was 13 and a bit miles from my farm. So I was going to do an out and back to a neighbor's farm. I made it to somewhere around mile 22 and just collapsed in the ditch and did like a phone call of shame to a neighbor saying, come pick
me up. Sounds like my virtual marathon, right, Kim?
Kind of.
So it took me a second try to actually finish the marathon, did a few more, and then I heard about Courtney DeWalter on the Rich Roll podcast, and I thought, this is insane. These people are nuts, like 100 miles, 50 miles. This is wild, but it somehow sparked my interest. And
So that was 2020 that you missed on completing the marathon on the first try.
I think it might have been 2021.
2021.
I think I did 2020 halves, a 2021 virtual marathon.
Okay. Well, that makes my point even more. So in the last 3 years, you have gone from barely being able to complete a marathon to now having a 200 mile under your belt. Is this true?
Yeah, I did Divide 200 last fall out in Alberta. Last year, I booked a really full ultra year. The Divide, it wasn't really even on my radar. I kind of threw my name in the lottery thinking you'd have very low chance. But if I could conceptualize a 200 and just know that people do it, then 100 milers aren't the big beast anymore.
Right.
So I put my name in the lottery. I didn't tell anyone. I just did it silently myself. Nobody knew. And it was just a kind of mental trick that 100s are not terrifying anymore.
Yeah.
And then they drew my name.
Okay.
And that's like, you know, as a kid, you chase a snake. Like,
yeah.
You see garter snakes, you chase the snake. And then you catch the snake and you panic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Divide Lottery was for me.
Yeah, the universe works in mysterious ways, and be careful what you wish for.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so just like on this thing, let's back up a little bit. You mentioned that you packed a lot into 2023, and did you ever? So I'm just going to kind of do a quick rundown for what I could find anyways. 100 miles at Rocky Raccoon in February, a 50K in North Carolina in May, Sinister 7 50K, another 100 miler in Montana, Crazy Mountain 100, Black Spur Ultra, then the Divide. So not only are these very long runs, they are mountainous runs. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about the training in Melville, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
For some of these runs.
Good question. How do you run these races as a Saskatchewan prairie flatlander?
It's possible because I've trained them in Winnipeg for mountain races, but it does require some creativity. What did you do there?
Yeah, I guess a lot of things like the 50Ks I was treating as training runs for the hundreds and Divide. So I did 14 ultras in 2023 of 50K or higher, and just trying to get to a point where a 50K was just a weekend long run regular thing.
Yeah.
In terms of training in Saskatchewan, I do have this little valley where I would do hill repeats endlessly. I don't know how much vert there is in it, but like very, very little. It's literally
like a
coulee.
Yeah.
I also like a lot of strength training, pulling. I have a big tractor tire with a rope. I'll pull it backwards. I have no idea if that's helpful or accurate as a skill, but it just seemed like for downhill running and hip flexors and glutes that was firing those things up. So I love the mountain runs. I seek those out. But it is kind of a novelty because I get such rare time in the mountains. I don't know if training more in the mountains would be helpful to me or would remove that magic where going out on a 200 or a mountain 100, even if you're not as physically prepared as you could be if you had access to mountains,
you're just blissed out
you're
to be
just
there.
So pleased to be there that that's your, you know,
it's
advantage.
Yeah, yeah. It's the reward at the end of all the tire dragging and the mental training going up and down 120-foot hills. Yeah, I know a little bit about that. So you rapidly established yourself as somebody who get the job done and do some long distances. We'll come back to your running here in a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit about your day and night job now, which is farming. So you are what you would call yourself a regenerative farmer in Saskatchewan. Like, how did that happen? Tell us the story. I understand you weren't born in Saskatchewan. You were born in BC. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm from BC. Yeah. I grew up on a beef cattle ranch in the interior of BC. So agriculture is what I grew up in.
Okay.
But I moved out to Saskatchewan in 2010 with the dream to start my own farm. And I leased a farm in southwestern Saskatchewan for several years. And then finally in 2017 had built up my herd and was able to buy a small farm. So I bought a half section near Melville. And at that point, livestock were my passion. I loved being around animals and the livestock. And in my mind, being a livestock producer meant taking care of the livestock. That seems obvious, but what I didn't realize is how much livestock health is related to grassland health, which is related to soil health. Mm. And I was able to buy my farm, probably in hindsight and in naivety, because it was such poor soil. So it was available to me at a price I could afford because it was very unproductive, very what I would call abused soil. And so that kind of started me down a path of what I call regenerative agriculture, where building soil becomes the priority. Yes, animal care is very, very important, but you get animal care because you've built a healthy soil that grows great productive grasses that keep your livestock healthy and growing and productive.
So 2017, so you've been in it now going on 7 years.
Yeah, exactly. So 7 years, the farm's grown to just over 1900 acres now, all seeded to perennial grasslands. And to runners, this may not mean anything, but the organic matter of my soil has increased from 2% to almost 6% in that time. And so that's a massive indicator of soil health, following the five principles of soil health to build what I'm proud of now in terms of healthy and resilient soils.
Okay, so you got to tell us what the five principles of soil health are.
Oh no! Now I better be able to name them, right? So keeping the soil covered, like keeping a litter, grasses, keeping your leaves, protecting the soil. If it's exposed to sunlight, it's losing water. Also, exposure is risk to the soil. So keeping the soil covered is one. Don't disturb your soil in terms of tillage. You know, if you think of all the soil life that is building that organic matter, when you go in and till that soil, you're just destroying their homes and taking a bulldozer to their homes. So don't disturb the soil. Diversity. So planting diversity is one. All the different types of plants have different roles. They're fixing nitrogen from the atmosphere, or some have deep tap roots that break up compaction. And so everyone has a role to play. And so when I plant diverse mixes of all sorts of different grasses and tuber crops and legumes, they can all play their role and feed that soil. The fourth one is incorporate livestock. So livestock are a way to cycle nutrients. They're taking dead plant material and putting it, spreading it across the soil. And they're also spreading a lot of the biology that lives in the soil. And even livestock so far as like earthworms and biology in the soil. And then the fifth one, keep a living root growing as long as possible in the season. So this is a hard one in Canada, but the longer a root is growing, the more photosynthesis is occurring. And photosynthesis is what takes carbon out of the atmosphere and puts it in the soil, and also sends down all the sugars and the root exudates to feed all the bacteria in the soil. So if you're only growing one crop for a short term, all of your soil life only gets a short buffet to photosynthesis. But if you're growing something early, mid-season, and late, then you keep feeding your soil.
So do you still have livestock on your land, or is it all now?
No. So now there's still livestock on the land, but I've sold my cow herd to focus on land management and make sure I can invest in those things. But cows still come onto my farm for the pasture grazing season. So that's my revenue source is grazing cattle. But my focus and priority now is in the soil. And also that ties into now I can run because the cows are there for the grazing season. And then when they're off, I can book a big race and go ahead and run some 200.
So this is the crux. This was my biggest curiosity point when I invited you on the podcast. I'm a farmer's daughter, for those of you that don't know. And I remember our family skis for a vacation, because that was the only time my dad could get away, was in the winter to go skiing, because we either were seeding, haying, silaging, branding, or weaning, or there was always something happening during the summer period. So if you are now not, you know, the cattle aren't yours, sounds like you don't have to put up feed for the cattle. My biggest question was going to be like, how in the world do you find the time to not only train, but get away to run all these races? Because that's not typical. Like, you don't often hear an ultra running farmer.
No.
So talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah, I was of that mindset as well. Like, to be a farmer, you're married to the farm.
Yeah.
It's 365. But I think that's why running and farming actually go so well together, because they both individually could consume your life. Running or farming.
Yeah.
You could pour your life into either one of those. Whereas if you do both, you can't. And that kind of forced me to look at my farm and say, how can I simplify this? How can I still have a good business and a good life, but without it being all year, without it being all consuming? And I mean, that's why I'm so appreciative of running, because I really did start out running as stress relief and as an escape from the farm. Like, farming is my dream and my passion. But at that point, it had consumed me.
Right.
And so I started running. I drove to town one day, and you know, like washboard over gravel roads, and you just vibrate along. And I remember doing that and just feeling it in my shoulders. Like, this feels so good. Like, just shaking out the stress of my shoulders. And just the thought came to me, like, what if I went for a jog down the road and bounced down the road? Would that just give me an escape from the farm, give me some time away from cows, and, you know, bounce out some of my stress in my shoulders? And so that is what started running for me. And then as it progressed and I wanted to run more, that helped me transition my farm to where it was a part of my life as opposed to consuming my life.
Yeah. I love that parallel, actually, that both can easily become all consuming. So this is one. Do you see any other ways that ultra running and farming are similar to each other?
Oh, absolutely. Like, farming is an ultra. You work all year for one moment in the fall when it all comes down to a short period when you put it all out there. You can get injured or derailed, or at any point along your farming, you know, crop disease, animal disease, pricing changes,
hail,
the risks are the same as spraining an ankle on a root somewhere. So yeah, to me, I mean, I do love running, but running really is a tool of lessons for me. And that's why I keep going back, whether it's training or the big ultra races. There's so many lessons there. There's so many parallels to the farm. There's so many parallels to life. I think what I learn from running and running community is kind of similar to those principles of soil health that really go beyond just soil health and also become some principles of my life in terms of embracing diversity, keeping growth as long as possible and throughout your life. There's lessons from the farm and the soil, and then the lessons I get from the race. And I really am of the mindset that the more I do both of those things, the more they feed each other, but the better my life is getting. I'm not winning races or a competitive runner, but I go back because the more I run, the longer I run, I really think the more value there is in life for me.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, they're both kind of an infinite game, right? Like my dad used to say, you're not a good farmer if 1 year makes or breaks you, or two or three. He used to have a rule of sevens. Like if you can last seven bad years, then you'll make it as a farmer. And I kind of think about that as with running. Like you're not going to become not just an ultra runner, but even a seasoned marathon, half marathon, 10K runner in 1 year. Right? Mm-hmm. It takes an investment in those microscopic lessons that you learn and those small little, you know, mm-hmm. tweaks that you make to your training plan or to your processes that ultimately turn you into whatever it is at the end. Right. Mm-hmm. I can definitely see the parallels there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many, like one of my mental tools when I run is I run with my bag of C's. You've played Scrabble, right? You know, there's that drawstring bag where you reach in, you grab the wooden tile and you put out your letters. So it's exactly like that, except every wooden tile is a C. So I can run with my bag of C's and whatever C I need, I can reach in. I'll like physically do it, like reach ahead, grab in my bag of C's and pull out a wooden tile, which is a C. So I can reach in if I need some confidence, some courage. Maybe I'm in a low spot and I need a connection with another runner or volunteer. I just need to draw on some community. Maybe things are going great and I just need to celebrate it, like feel mm-hmm. all the goodness and celebrate the work that's gone into this ultra. Same, I can reach in and rely on my consistency, believe in my capability. And there's all sorts of different C words. I didn't know that all of my running words were crazy. But
when you first said it, I thought you said my bag of seeds.
Okay.
Like as a farmer. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that works too, but it could be C's or seeds. Okay.
That would make sense. But like all of those things are things that I rely on for big, hard courses. And the things that I need for my resilience. And if we parallel that to farming, those are all the things I rely on as well on the farm.
Yeah.
Community, mm-hmm. connections, consistency, all of those things, like resilience on the farm and resilience in ultras are what I'm trying to build.
Yeah, yeah. And I think like you can... We probably all know people that have had a few great years of running and then they've burned out completely if they don't take care of themselves, right? And it's kind of it's reminding me as you're talking about soil health that you can harvest a lot with not taking proper care of your soil and then it's gone. Like, what do they say? It's like, if you're not taking care of the soil, don't you have like just a few 3 to 7 years or something? And then you can't regrow that back. And so that parallel was striking me, and you can tell me if there's any truth to it, but you were talking about you got your farm at this great discount, perhaps because the soil was so crappy, and now you've gone and increased the organic matter from 2% to 6%. So first of all, I'm curious how you actually can measure that, but you're showing that it is possible to turn this around. So I was under the impression that once the soil's depleted, it's depleted, but you're saying that you are able to rebuild it. So talk more about that and how you see potentially some parallels to running there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you measure organic matter in a lab. So you take a representative sample of the field and submit it to a laboratory where they run all their tests.
It's the VO2 max for farm. No, I'm just kidding.
It's the VO2 max of yes.
Hey, it's all about oxygen and carbon, right? Yeah.
But yeah, with those principles of soil health, like those are the pillars of regenerative agriculture. And so, and that's kind of the concept. It's not sustainable. I'm not sustaining something. I'm trying to regenerate a system. I want to get that life back in the soil. I want to get those nutrients back in the soil. And I want to find the systems that work very contextually for this piece of land and this soil to regenerate it and bring it back to health. So nutrients like nitrogen, that can come from the atmosphere with those legumes that fixate it. So there's all sorts of different tools within nature and within plants and livestock to regenerate the soil. And yeah, I said this in another article about running and farming, that I feel like with regenerative agriculture, that's where I can make a, I feel like that gives me purpose and meaning in my life, and where I can make a contribution to something that I see as great. And it's running that has kind of regenerated me. Like, that's what I initially used for stress management. Now it's about resilience and really building my life. And so I feel like running's regenerating me, so I can keep going down the regenerative path and keep improving my soil.
So let's flip those for a moment. So you talk about how running regenerates you, but yet your farm also has fueled your running. I understand that you, you've done these unique little challenges or projects where you've trained for an entire race, or I think also a season, eating entirely things that were produced on your farm or in your region. Tell us about how that went. I'm actually curious. I'm going to ask all the questions nobody else has. Like, did you ever go hungry? Did you find it was easy? Did you find it was hard? Like, how did that go?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. I really enjoy these projects, like of aligning my running and my values, like my consumer values and my farm values. And so like Rocky Raccoon, was that January, February of 2023? I ran that in my fueling. I made meatballs. So it was beef from my farm with eggs from a neighbor, with honey from a honey farmer about 30 miles away, and Hascap berries from a Saskatchewan orchard. So made all of that into a meatball, and that was my fueling for 100 miles. I did Edmonton Marathon with just salted dry beef jerky from my farm. And then I think it was like 21 or 22 the whole summer. I did 75 days of training and whatever half marathons and marathons I was doing at that time, only eating food from my farm that I grew. So beef, lamb, pork, eggs, and whatever I got from my garden.
Wow. So would you say, are you more like a low carb fat adapted athlete then? It sounds like.
Yeah, I don't follow anything. Like, those were more self-sufficient type goals, but yeah,
values in, were different.
In generally, protein and fat are what I feel good and sit well with me. Even at a like at a race, I want to eat the hamburger patties and the cheese quesadillas with meat on them and avocado and that type of stuff. I'm not a jelly bean and candy runner. I'm especially
well,
for the mountains.
Yeah, most people after the first 6 hours aren't either. Like, late into an ultra, almost everybody wants the savory, fatty food.
Yeah, if I got to climb a mountain, I want a steak or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you think that, like, which came first, the chicken or the egg, metaphorically and literally? Like, do you think that you're choosing to fuel yourself on the type of food that you have available? Or do you think, like, you just prefer that type of food because that's what you're used to?
Probably a bit of both. Like, I mean, I'm not following performance nutrition advice. I'm this feels good for me. and it fits my values, and maybe it feels good for me because it fits my values.
Right, right.
I also am such a believer in seeing how much healthy soil grows healthy grass to grow healthy livestock. Well, then I want to eat that healthy livestock that I grow in that system. So I feel like that's the final, maybe not the final, but that's a part of that chain, is feeding the soil so it feeds me, so I can go do some great effort ultra.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may have already described it in your berry honey meatball mixture, but is there?
they were really good. Like, if that doesn't sound good, like it really was quite good.
Yeah,
it sounds unique. So that was going to be my question: is what is the most unique thing that you've eaten? You know, that most people wouldn't eat during an ultra that you produced on your farm or sourced from your area.
I would say that's probably the most.
The most
unique in that it was every, and I like packed it down to Texas. Like that was,
yeah,
it wasn't a local race. I had to really plan. I mean, it all takes planning. Like the summer I trained on just food that I grew, I had to specifically plan when that would be and have livestock ready for harvest then. I bought some feeder lambs to finish on my farm for that, planning my garden of what would be ready on time, and the garden was a flop that year, so it made that that was more so meat and eggs, so but that's kind of the fun. Like I really enjoy that. It's a part of, maybe it's not training, but a part of the running plan that does fulfill me and make it fun.
And I have to imagine that's a bit of a conversation starter with people. Like, let's face it, when you get a bunch of runners together, what are we talking about? Like, what are you eating? How are you training? Right. So it must come up in conversation. Have you piqued anybody's interest in giving your meatballs a try? Are they going to market soon, or
or
are you on to the next greatest thing? Yeah.
I think I am. I buy them.
Oh, this is interesting. Okay, so let's move along to a slightly different topic here. You recently just came back from pacing Evan Birch, who was just on our show a few weeks ago, in the Speed Project, where he ran, correct me if I'm wrong here, from the Santa Monica Pier to the old Las Vegas sign across the desert. Southern California, Nevada there. How many total miles was that run? 300 and some?
I think it was 330. It was 464 kilometers, his route. Like the cool thing about this race is there's no course. So there's a start line and an end line, and you choose how you get there. So everyone's distance was a bit different. But when he stopped his watch, I think it was 464 kilometers. So.
Okay, so if you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to the episode with Evan Birch, where he talks about that project, where he was raising awareness and funds for mental health, but also challenging himself. So you were part of his crew and also paced almost half of that run with him. So
yeah, I think he did about 120 miles.
So. Yeah, okay, so not quite half, but a lot. We really want to hear about what it's like from the pacer crew side for an event like that. And I really don't know what question to ask other than just tell us some stories. Like what
pacing
would one
is wild. Pacing. I want to do more pacing. It's such a cool way to get to know someone. We had such a great team. It feels like a totally different sport. In fact, I told a bunch of people there, it feels like going to someone else's branding or weaning, like when you're vaccinating cows or something, where you go for a hard day's work and it's social and it's fun, but it doesn't come with the responsibility of being yours. You're going to support someone, and being there for somebody makes it even more fun than if it was your own race or your own branding or your own chore on your farm. But it also feels like a totally different sport because at least for this race, I didn't know how much I was doing, when I was needed, or what the, we had a general plan, but it was very much, I mean, how much can you plan when you run 330 miles? It was, it was very much.
Well, and there's no set course and there's no set aid stations or stops. Give us a little bit of a logistical like summary here. How many people were in part of his crew? I know you had a few vehicles. Like, how did you guys do this?
Yeah. So to start with, we had two pacers, his fiance Cassie, his crew chief, and then another friend driving the bus. So there were four of us to start, or four plus Evan running, obviously, and then picked up another pacer later on, or two more pacers later on in the race. So we started pacing him somewhere around mile 40, and we're alternating sections of around 15 miles each. But it really felt like on-call running. Which is so unique in terms of normally I'd go for a run and you can mentally prepare. I'm doing 15 miles. I'm doing whatever I'm doing this day. I know about when I'm going to be done. You can plan it. Whereas this race specifically, but perhaps pacing in general, it was when you need me, I have to be there. I have to be energetic and I have to be ready to go. And I can remember one time I just paced, I think around 10 miles. I went for a nap in the Jeep and got woken up. Stuart, are you ready? And I was thinking that meant, oh, I'll help crew. I'll fill some flasks or something and they'll carry on. But they needed to switch out a pacer then. And so I woke up from a nap and within 2 minutes was running. And the next stretch was 37 miles. So it was... It was a totally different mental skill of you got to be ready to run. You don't know how long you're going to go. And it's your job to be in the right frame of mind that we're getting there.
Yeah. And it's not about you.
It's not about you.
Wow.
That would be so hard. Like you would stiffen up and then you'd have to get moving again. And it's not even like a backyard.
Exactly. It's like start, stop.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be challenging.
But you know what? It's just another lesson of ultra in terms of there's another element of hard. And I come back from that and it's just changed my perception of A, what is hard? And B, everything is scalable. Like he did 330 miles. A 200 miler is not the big one. And like, that's not that far, which is wild to say, but somehow in that process, how far is really changed.
Well, that isn't that kind of what you were saying at the beginning when you thought the marathon was far and you didn't complete your first one. And then you listened to that podcast with Courtney and she normalized like these really far distances to the point that then something in between didn't seem that outrageous. And so it's almost like that lesson just keeps happening, right? And you normalize these longer and longer distances. And now your own 200 miles doesn't seem like, I mean, I'm sure it still seems hard, like
still a long
days. Yeah, but it seems possible, at least in the realm of possible. So, do you see this almost as like training for your upcoming 200 mile race? And maybe if we can back up, like, how did you even come to be part of Evan's team here? Like, are you two friends? Like, how did you get called up for this job?
Yeah, absolutely. Like in terms of your first comment of scaling things, I remember after Divide last year, I ran Javelina 100 down in Arizona.
Only 100.
And it was wild. It was that scaling of like, oh, it's only one night's sleep that I miss. Like I'll be done by tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, and I think you did it in like, 25 and a half hours. Like, it's not even, it's one day.
That does blow my mind of how you can scale hard in your mind, regardless of running or life or other things. What was your second part of the question? How did you get to know Evan?
Was it during the divide? Like, is that how you guys met?
We met. We had met before. He did a run in Central Alberta last summer, and I went out to pace him for that as well. He's the only person I've ever paced. So those two races, I just knew of him through social media and was looking for a chance to get in the mountains and have a big day. And he had made some comment of looking for pacers. So I went out and ran with him last June. And then we both ran Divide together. And probably for the first two thirds of that race, we were constantly seeing each other, ping ponging. I love climbing, and he'd fly by me on the downhills. And so got to know each other at Divide. And then, yeah, when he was putting together his plan for this, I wanted to be a part of it. And it worked perfect for a big week of training as my last week before I taper for my race. So it was great.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, 200 miles, 330 miles. These are not short distances. So you got to kind of like the guy you're pacing with and not get sick of each other. You obviously hit it off okay.
Absolutely. And like, that's such a good point, because I felt like that race, I mean, we're all in the RV together, whatever it was, five of us or at different times, but we started out, it was kind of like going to summer camp as a kid. Like, it's going to be this wild adventure, but you show up, you know each other, but you don't know each other. And then you run 330 miles through the desert.
And then you know each other.
It'd be interesting, like, if I do keep pacing Evan, how does that change?
Yeah.
In terms of, because there were times when, as the pacer, you're questioning, or at least I was questioning, like, what's my appropriate response here? Does he need push? Mm-hmm. Does he need hardness? Does he need softness? Mm-hmm. Like, that degree of how well you know someone.
Yeah, would be an asset for sure.
Would be an asset. And also, when you don't know someone extremely well, you also don't want to, it's their race, it's their race plan. At least for me, there were times when I was like, I don't want to make an assumption of how he might respond to bring out the best in him. You know, that might have to be a next race thing. So
again, when you also don't know somebody super well, it gives you permission to say some of the things you might not say to your like BFF as well. I find it can go both ways. Like, you can almost be a little bit more real with people you don't know that well.
But that was so cool about the team we had there, is we, you know, going back to the principles of soil health and embracing diversity, everyone had a role. Like, there was the hard-ass pusher. There was the softness. Okay, we need to take it easy and, like, regroup. There was the person watching the watch and stepping up the pace. And then there was crew and pacers taking care of each other, too.
There was the person eating all the yogurt. So,
That was my
Evan asked me. Evan said you got to ask him about the yogurt. So tell us about the yogurt there.
I don't think this is that extreme, but I was trying to figure out. You know, again, like you said, as a pacer, it's not about you. You're there to support. So I wanted to make sure I was fueled well, so that I could run whenever I was needed. And I know I can't fuel off of snacks. And so I was trying to figure out, what is it, like, a good substantial protein, fat, carb meal that doesn't take preparation, that doesn't take cooking, that doesn't take a lot of like storage space? What's something I can just put in a little bag somewhere, have for the day, but be well fueled? And for me, for whatever reason, yogurt did that for me. I could eat a tub of yogurt and I was fueled and good to go. So I would be stopped whenever he stopped for an aid station. I would grab a tub of yogurt and down my tub of Greek yogurt and then be ready to run again. And I thought that was a great way to fuel, and it was working wonderful. I might even do that at my next race, but everyone else got a kick out of me sitting out in the desert, pounded down yogurts by the tubful.
Well, I had to ask it because I know you posted an Insta story with something about, this is brought to you by Chobani yogurt. Yes. But the thing is, I did reach out to Evan before this episode. I said, give me a question to ask him that he's going to make him laugh. And Evan, I don't know if he saw that. Like, he may have seen that story, but he was running then. And you know how stories like disappear after a day. So he may not have
seen that story. Running.
And, and the fact that he brought that up, I was like, okay, I've got to bring up the yogurt. Because obviously this made an impression out there in the desert. Anyways.
Well, I didn't have access to my homegrown beef for, you know, anything out there. So I had to call.
And on your farm. So on that note, though, did anything surprise you about this pacing gig? Did anything challenge you? Like, where, you know, what were some kind of memorable stories?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised seeing it from the other end because it's like at Divide, I went through my highs and lows and falling apart and convinced I was ready to DNF. And then my crew, my sister then got me through and did her magic as crew does and got me to the finish line. So that was really beautiful to see from the other perspective, especially watching Cassie, his fiance. Like, it really is such a team effort, but also not being the runner and seeing Evan and how resilient and strong he is was so amazing. But I would say the biggest takeaway was I loved pacing and I want to do that more.
Okay.
And getting back to the how running fuels me, how running is lessons for life. I do feel for me in life as a friend, as a family member, you know, as a farmer, probably because of farming for a lot of reasons where it's so busy and so consuming. Like, I'm not always the pacer for my friends. I'm not the person who just shows up unannounced when you're moving to help load the couch or because I have to do whatever I have to do on the farm. And so some of those lessons of pacing, of how meaningful those people are for those small things just in life, like, I want to pace more for people's ultras, but I want to pace more my friends and my family and people.
Life.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think you could add another C to your bag then. You could add contribution.
Yes. I love it. That's going in the bag.
Yes.
There you go. You know, that is, let's not lose this statement that you just made, because I think it's really, really powerful. Like, we can extract ourselves out of our real lives and go into the mountains or the trails for, you know, a few days or a day. And the world really does stop. Like, you lose track of everything is happening when you're doing these races, when you're pacing. Mm-hmm. But what about the rest of your life? Like, I love how you just said, I want to pace more in my real life as well with my family and my friends. And I think that's really cool.
I think those skills, like bringing out the best in someone. And like, I'm not saying that I did that but that's a skill I want to learn. Like, I want to learn that at an ultra because that has to be totally transferable anywhere. Yeah. If you can find someone at their low and get them through.
Absolutely. Well, it's life in a day, they say, right? But it's also what did we say? Relationships on steroids.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Like, and the highs are super high and the lows can be super low. And, and if you can, you know, take that energy that runner brings in, you're assessing it immediately and then you're throwing it back out there. You either have to flip their mindset or keep up with it, one or the other. And, it is a skill.
And you get to learn from the other pacers and crew, like watching the other people on the team and how they, like, that was such a valuable thing for me of what were their tools or their tricks or their strategies to support someone.
And I loved too how you said, like, we see things through our own unique lens all the time, right? And you have this farming lens that you're bringing to the running, especially here. And how you said everyone on the team sort of, there's diversity there. Like everybody had, like he might choose a different pacer when he needs one thing versus another. And so, yes, you can be learning from the other people like, oh, that's cool. Like I'm going to put that in my little bag of tricks or whatever. But we're also different, unique people. And that's a good thing, right? Like we want to almost own the thing that we're, that makes us us too. And so I thought that that was a pretty insightful thing to say, is that like, yeah, diversity is one of your five principles of soil health, but having diversity in the people around you is also really, really important. So on that note, do you have advice for anyone that might be a find themselves in a crewing or pacing position in the future?
Oh, geez, any advice? I mean, just do it. I assume at least for me, it's something that will take practice. Like it's not a thing. If you want to be a good pacer, I think that is a practice.
It is a skill. It really is.
In itself. And I mean, I've only done it twice, so I haven't honed that skill, but I want to.
Yeah, just do it. All right. Mm-hmm. So we are called the Inspired Souls Podcast, and we do like to ask our guests, is there any person, group of people, anything you'd like to highlight as a particular inspiration to you along your running journey?
Probably my sister, my younger sister, Julie. Like she is that pacer crew support. That is her masterful skill set. She crewed me at Divide and I would not have finished that without her. And I feel like that's been, again, going back to parallels to life, like that's been her role in my life as well. Some of my key low moments in life, she's been my pacer and my crew, getting me through. And
okay, beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Amazing.
So what have you got? We've talked about this. You've got this 200 coming up, like at the time of this recording, it's like this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Friday.
It's like four days away.
4 days away.
Okay, so any last
meatballs yet?
What's that?
I haven't cooked my meatballs yet.
Oh my gosh! Panic mode.
Did we explicitly state what we were recording? I thought that was pre-recording. What your next event is? So tell us what's coming up for you.
Yeah, I have another big year. So this will be the first ultra of the year. Down, it starts in Georgia, ends in Alabama, and it's the Southern States 200. So Divide last year was my first 200, and they send you off like these beautiful ridge lines, but challenging climbs for the first 70 kilometers. So the first 70 kilometers of Divide, I'd say, was the hardest. And then you have to go run a long ways to get to 200 miles. Whereas Southern States is the opposite. You run about 190 miles. And then they send you up to the highest peak of Alabama.
In the last 10 miles.
And the finish line is actually on the peak of Mount Cheha. Or
oh, that's just cruel.
I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
Yikes. Wow. So, and these were both inaugural races, right? You ran the first year of the Divide 200. You're going to be running the first time that the Southern 200 is running. These races are just starting to crop up everywhere. Are you particularly drawn to inaugural races? Like, is that on purpose or is that kind of by accident?
Yes, by accident, but I'm drawn to them. Like Divide, it was just the first year. The energy on the start line, I don't know. It felt like being a kid, where felt like going on an adventure. Nobody knew the course. Nobody knew what was coming. Nobody had the inside scoop. You know, were cutoff times aggressive or too slow? Like, what was this going to look like? What time do we even target?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It felt like, let's go on an adventure and let's see what happens. And I really like that.
Yeah. And I think in many, many ways, that's why people run ultras, right? It's for the, like, you're leaning into that unknown in the biggest way, right? It's I'm drawn to this because I have zero clue what's about to happen, and neither does anyone else, because, you know, in this case, it's the inaugural one. So that's kind of exciting. And I just find it curious because a lot of people, like they hate uncertainty in their everyday life, but then they like go and seek it out in adventures like this. But what if we brought that to our everyday life? Like, I don't know what's happening. Like, I don't have all the answers, you know, could we bring some of that curiosity or that sense of adventure into our own lives? Perhaps, right?
That's another C word that should be in there. Yeah.
Yes. Curiosity. You're begging.
You start noticing them. Yeah.
But, you know, I will say that is, I think, a characteristic of somebody who is drawn to farming too, right? It is completely risk. Unpredictable. Mm-hmm. It is risk. Every time you put seed in the ground, you never know if you're going to have a decent harvest. My dad ended up in Vegas a few times and I was like, Dad, you're not a gambler. And he says to me, what do you mean? I'm a farmer. That's the biggest gambler anybody could be, right? I could definitely, I've never ever thought about the parallels before, but you really made me think in such a different way.
Well, maybe on that note, like, is there anything you can leave our listeners with? Like, because I'm sure that people, again, if they went into a conversation like we are with you, it's like, oh gosh, I have so many questions. Like, what can I do to insert little regenerative farming practices in my own little life? Like, I don't want to buy a farm and all of that, what you've done, but is there anything small that we all could do, like as a first step of dipping our toe into being a little bit more regenerative and sustainable?
I think looking at the five principles of soil health, one of the key common elements is embracing growth. So whether it's a principle that allows for growth or promotes it, like keeping a living root as long as possible in the soil. Anytime you can incorporate growth into your life in nature, we're feeding the soil, feeding the microbes in the soil, promoting photosynthesis and getting carbon in the ground. And so anytime you look in your life and you can promote growth in nature, that's a win. And then again, drawing back to the life, anytime you can promote growth in life, you know, what a win that is too.
Oh, great answer. Okay. So sounds like you're a person that is going to continue to have some amazing adventures. So where can people follow along and see what's coming up for you in the future with your adventures?
Yeah, I'm active on Instagram, both my running. I share a lot of running stories and also some farm content as well. And that's at Stuart Chutter on Instagram.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Stuart. This has been refreshing, a totally different type of conversation than we typically have. And I know I will be picturing my bag of seeds when I am out on my next run.
Or seeds.
Or seeds. Yeah.
Hey, what kind of seeds should we plant?
Diverse ones.
There you
go. All of them. All sorts.
I think even after this 1 hour conversation, I could have answered my own question. You've done your job of imparting lots of wisdom onto us. So thank you for that.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed the conversation, but also love the episodes you put out and the stories you share in running.